You're listening to the Body Pros podcast coverage of CROI 2008, the 15th Conference on Retroviruses and Opportunistic Infections. The conference took place in Boston, Massachusetts from February 3rd through February 6th, 2008.
This is Bonnie Goldman, editorial director of the Body Pro. You're about to sit in on one of the daily press conferences at CROI 2008. You'll hear researchers discuss the findings of some of the most noteworthy studies at the conference. In this podcast, two researchers will discuss CCR5 antagonists in development. Dr. Sarah Pett of the University of South Wales in Australia reviews phase 1 trial results on SCH-532-706. Then, Dr. Barry Zingman of Montefiore Medical Center in New York discusses 48-week results from a study on Vicarovirok.
This was a phase 1 study of a new CCR5 antagonist, SCH-532-706. And this is the first time this drug was trialled in HIV-1-infected individuals. So the in vitro data for this study showed it was pretty potent against many different HIV isolates. And in the healthy volunteer studies, it had favourable pharmacokinetic profile when it was dosed with ritonavir 100 milligrams once a day. So this study was designed to look at the safety, viral efficacy and pharmacokinetics in HIV-positive individuals. And the target enrollment was 12 patients, and 12 patients were enrolled. They received 10 days of dosing with 706, which was twice daily dosed with ritonavir once a day. And then after the 10 days of dosing, they had a washout period where they received no antiretroviral therapy for a further 14 days. And then on day 25, they started combination therapy, which was at the discretion of the treating clinician. The mean reduction in their viral load at day 10, which was the last day of dosing with the study drug and ritonavir, was minus 1.3 log 10 copies per mil. And what was interesting about the drug was that there was a post-antibiotic effect. So on day 15, which was 4 days after they last received the study drug, there was a further reduction in their viral load from baseline to 1.6 log reduction from baseline. And that post-antibiotic effect actually continued. There was a one log reduction from baseline that was sustained at day 20, and the patients hadn't returned to their baseline viral load at day 25. The drug was safe and well tolerated. The most common adverse event that was reported was gastrointestinal upset in about two-thirds of patients. But in fact, in 60% of the patients, we considered that this was not related to the study drug, possibly related to the ritonavir that they were receiving. The adverse events were just grade 1, very mild. There was one serious adverse event reported, a patient who developed pericarditis, which resolved after 4 days. But this was nearly 2 weeks after the patient had actually received any of the study drug. And so we said it was possibly related, but a remote relationship. There were no other safety concerns. There was no X4 detection. There were no ECG changes of concern. So in summary, this new CCR5 antagonist appeared to be safe and well-tolerated. It was clearly biologically active, and it's certainly feasible to give this once daily. I didn't mention that the half-life with ritonavir was 40 hours. And this, coupled with the fact that the drug has a very slow disassociation from the CCR5 receptor, means it's realistic that this could be given once daily for patients.
I'm going to be reviewing with you the results of the VICTOR-E1 clinical trial. And to summarize, the results demonstrate that the experimental agent, Vicarovirok, is a potent oral CCR5 receptor antagonist that has significant potential as a new treatment option for people with HIV. VICTOR-E1 is a multinational study that was done in 12 countries. It randomized 116 patients who were screened for the presence of CCR5 tropic HIV-1, and then they were randomized to one of three arms. Each arm, they received a ritonavir-boosted protease inhibitor as part of their optimized background therapy, and then in addition, they were given either Vicarovirok 30 milligrams, 20 milligrams, or placebo, and they were followed for 48 weeks. The patients needed to be fairly advanced. They needed to have been triple class experienced in prior antiretrovirals. They had to have mutations against nucleoside reverse transcriptase inhibitors and protease inhibitors, and they had to have an RNA level over 1,000. The primary study outcome was, the primary efficacy endpoint was change in log 10 RNA levels at week 48, and we also looked at suppression of less than 50 and less than 400, and safety and tolerability. The patients were evenly randomized between the three arms. They were an advanced population with a CD4 count of around 200, and about 85% have fewer than three active drugs in their background therapy. I should mention the randomization was stratified for high viral loads over 100,000 and for enfluvitide use. Most of the patients completed the study, except in the placebo arm. Half of the patients did not complete there because of viral failure. The primary study's endpoint, as I said, was reduction in log 10 RNA levels at week 48. Both of the Vicarvirok arms showed a superior and statistically significant drop in RNA levels at week 48. They averaged about 1.76 logs. In comparison to placebo, that was 0.79 logs. When we looked at some harder-to-treat groups, for example, the group that had RNA levels over 100,000 at screening, there were trends to improvement in the Vicarvirok group, especially in the 30-milligram group. There were also trends to improvement in the Vicarvirok 30 milligrams in people with low CD4 counts. When we further analyzed for the endpoints of achieving less than 400 copies or less than 50 copies, both of the Vicarvirok groups performed significantly better, statistically better, than the placebo groups, and this was seen across all levels of activity of the background therapy. So if somebody had a background therapy with no active drugs or three or more active drugs, the Vicarvirok, especially the 30 milligrams, added additional efficacy. That was both for less than 400 and less than 50. There were increases in CD4 counts in the Vicarvirok arms, about 100 to 130 versus 60 in placebo. Significantly, there were no differences in adverse event rates between the Vicarvirok-treated patients and placebo. There were no changes in liver function abnormalities. There were some patients in each of the arms who started the study at screening with CCR5 tropic virus, but did have emergence of dual mixed or X4 virus during the study. These were seen in all the arms. There were a few patients more in the 30 milligram arm. In general, especially in the 30 milligram arm, DMX4 virus emerged very early. In fact, many of them were at baseline before the first dose, and then or at week 8, which was the first testing on therapy. And only half of these patients in the 30-milligram dose were stopped with a high viral load. I'll just mention that efficacy correlated with levels, and the levels in the 30-milligram group were better than in the 20-milligram group. So the conclusions were that Vicarvirok plus background therapy significantly superior to optimized background therapy alone, that there was added benefit to Vicarvirok regardless of the number of active drugs, and the 30-milligram dose had special efficacy in the harder-to-treat populations. There were no relevant safety differences, and based on these results, the 30-milligram dose was chosen for phase 3 studies of this agent.
Thank you very much. One question for Sarah and Barry is, you have a drug, and maybe somebody from Sharing is here to help out. You have a drug in phase 1 and a drug in phase 3. What's the priority? With the same mechanism of action.
I don't have it.
Sharing?
Yes, definitely. I don't have the answer to that.
Okay, open for questions. Jules.
So, are the two drugs cross-resistant? Is the one the new one, is it active against Vicarvirok resistance? Do you know?
I don't know that.
And for Barry, I think it's, I don't know if you mentioned it, but it says in the abstract that viral failure was not associated with switching to X4 or mixed. So does that mean that the people who came out with mixed virus during the study had a good viral response?
Yes, so, especially in the more potent 30-milligram arm, there was more development or emergence of DMX4 virus early in the study. And in fact, about half of the people who developed DMX4 variants had it detected before they even got their first dose. Then subsequent to that, they were treated with ribavirin and a background therapy regimen. Many of them improved. They did better. There was less of an association with high viral loads in the 30 milligram group. There was much more of an association between the development of DMX4 and discontinuation with viral loads over 400 in the lower dose ribavirin group and in the placebo group. So in the 20 milligram and the placebo group, it was about 1-to-1. But in the ribavirin 30 milligram group, only half of the patients ended up being discontinued with viral loads over 400. So I think we're seeing the combination of a potent drug, ribavirin, as well as optimized therapy as well.
Actually, a direct follow-up to that question for you, Barry. Given that you said that many of the patients were already dualrhythmotropic at the time of first dose, and yet at baseline, weren't all these patients screened for being purely arbitropic? How much of a lag was there? Was that shift in tropism developed between the time of screening and the time of the first dose? And how long of a time was that?
Yes, so patients were enrolled in the study based on the tropism assay done at screening. They had one tropism assay done in screening. It could be a maximum of about 6 weeks before they got their first study drug dose, so maximum of 6 weeks. At their very first study day, they got more blood drawn and started their dosing that day. They got tropism assay done that day. So they had tropism assays done once at screening, once at day one, once at day eight, once at day 24, once at day 48, so all throughout the study. Much of the shifts in all three arms actually happened earlier. In placebo and 20 milligrams, they were more evenly throughout the study. In the 30 milligram arm, it was especially early, probably because it's a more potent drug. It suppresses CCR5 tropic virus, so underlying DMX4 virus comes out earlier.
What percentage shifted between screening and day one?
And this
has been observed.
It was six patients. So it was 6 out of 39 patients.
This is very consistent with what's been observed before because we're at the detection limit for dual or mixed. Okay. Here.
Andrea Bakowski from Germany. I have a question for Simon. Could you just explain the difference between both CCR5 antagonists between ribavirin and Is there any benefits or non-benefits?
That's the question that everybody here is getting at. The first way to answer that question is that certainly there have not been any head-to-head studies between the two drugs. One of the nice things with ribavirin is that when it's given with a ritonavir-boosted protease inhibitor, it has excellent pharmacokinetics. It has reliably high minimum concentrations. It has a long plasma half-life over a day, and it can be given with no, irregardless of food, and it's so far very, very well tolerated.
Yeah, question for Dr. El-Sadr. In the SMART study, in the group that reinitiated therapy, was the excess risk related to HIV-related opportunistic disease and such, or was it related to those excess in the heart and kidney and liver that were also seen?
I think with the reinitiation of treatment, there was a decrease in excess risk for all of the above, for the HIV-related complications, for deaths or caused death, as well as for the major cardiovascular renal kidney and liver conditions. However, it was only the statistically significant decrease was only shown for the combined endpoint. I think most of the decrease in excess risk was due to a decrease in opportunistic infections. Most of the death, however, were due to non-opportunistic infections.
Okay, up front.
This is for Barry. Given the fact that the X4 emerges so rapidly, could you comment upon the need for more sensitive assays to detect minority populations and screening?
It's clear that that we need the most sensitive assays we can. What we also need to see, though, is with, in future clinical trials, is whether or not all the CCR5 inhibitors and at all doses, all potencies, whether or not they can be still active with a small minority population or not. But right now, certainly, we strive to rule out DMX4 presence before giving somebody a CCR5 receptor antagonist.
Up front here, second row, on the end.
Oh.
One behind.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's for Barry. Jeff Barry, Positively Aware Magazine. Regarding the immunologic benefit of the 20 and 30 milligram groups, are you looking at the immune reconstitution syndrome? Are you seeing any episodes of that? And also, any correlation to CD4 percentages?
We looked at all the adverse events, serious and non-serious, and there were no noted immune reconstitution syndromes. Of course, patients were not enrolled in the study if they had a recent active opportunistic infection, I think was within 4 to 8 weeks. So they'd be a little bit less likely to develop immune reconstitution syndrome.
And then John in the back.
This question is also for Dr. Zangman. I'm curious if you can help me put in perspective how I should think about the tropism switch with the CCR5 inhibitors. Are we worried that the virus will just get in through the other door, so to speak?
At least what I'm trying to figure out that question. At least what we think is happening in many of these patients is that they actually already have DMX4 virus, that it's there. It's a minority population of the virus that's already present. And there's relatively little evidence that these agents drive the development of the X4 virus. But that will also, I mean, we these take further studies to evaluate.
I just have a simple nomenclature question. We like to call everything inhibitors. I've just referred to CCR5 inhibitors as your abstract antagonist. I understand the mechanism difference. Is there any crime with calling them CCR5 inhibitors? Is there anything wrong with that?
Well, CCR5 is a receptor.
That's right. That's right.
Refer to things that bind block function of the receptor as antagonists, whereas inhibition is of an enzymatic process generally, catalytic process.
We're all going to use these terms. It seems to me that there is inhibition of chemokine binding to the receptor, and that's...
Yeah. Well, put it this way, you're typically antagonistic, but not inhibitory. Okay, I think that does it. One more.
In I think there was only one early study with CCR5 inhibitor. There was noted to be an increase in malignancies. I haven't heard that replicated in any other CCR5 inhibitor studies. Is that considered by principal investigators or the community to be sort of a dead issue, something that happened by chance? Any comment on that?
So some malignancies of, I believe, three different kinds were seen in 7-9 patients in an early ACTG study of Vicarvaric. And there was an expert panel that met and reviewed the cases and judged that there was not significant evidence that it was related to the drug itself, but more that it was occurring in an overall very sick population of patients who were entered into the study. There were no malignancies that occurred during the 48 weeks of the study. After the end of the study, eligible patients who still had CCR5 tropism were able to continue on open-label medication, Maraviroc 30 milligrams. One person, 3 months later, 3 months into his course, did develop Hodgkin's disease and is under treatment. That's all I have to say about that. Otherwise, there's been very, very few malignancies since then. That one patient who developed it also had a CD4 count under 100 pretty much the whole time, so never really had an immune response.
The opinions expressed by hosts or interviewees in this podcast do not constitute professional advice, should not be considered substitutes for professional services and do not necessarily represent the opinions of Body Health Resources Corporation or its sponsors. Please see the full disclaimer online at thebodypro.com. If you have comments or questions, please contact us.
This has been a report on CROI 2008 from The Body Pro. For more podcasts and full coverage of this conference, visit us online at thebodypro.com/CROI2008.